Hey, everybody. We're here tonight on this beautiful summer evening with Wayne Coyne of the Flaming Lips, who will be performing shortly at Summerfest. He's taken time out of his busy schedule.
Very busy.
Very busy. He is not texting Blake Shelton so he could talk to us.
That's true. I was in the middle of texting him, but we stopped. Yeah, and to see... Well, I've already texted him. No, I was in the middle of doing a Instagram shout-out to him, yeah. But he's nice. I think he's playing. He's playing tonight. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
We have a... one of the times we played here, Britney Spears was playing at the same time. And... we were playing, you know, late like we are tonight, and we sent out the vibe or the idea, the message that we wanted to meet Britney Spears. Didn't think it would really happen. And then, you know, someone came over and sort of grabbed us, and we didn't realize what a complicated rigmarole of a thing it was going to be. We went through a lot of secret corridors and all that. We did end up meeting her after about an hour and a half of security clearance and all that, and it was a strange experience. She was very nice.
Excellent. You guys have tremendous luck with Pop Shantouses. You've got you've done work with Kesha and
we have indeed,
Miley,
yeah.
Cyrus,
yeah,
so
yeah.
You have the magic touch with the
maybe
radio.
maybe Britney. You know, way back in 2010 or 11, I think it was when we were here. Maybe she put out the word. Maybe that's how that's all come into play, and I don't really know it. I don't know the secret message that she let out there into the world. Yeah.
So you are in the midst of a tour. This is your last in America, and then you go to UK, correct?
I think we do Chicago next week. So, but it's never really like, you know, when a lot of groups will say they're on tour. They mean like they're on tour for like a year here, and then they're going to go to somewhere else for a year. And we're just always jumping around, you know. We'll jump to Europe for a week and then go to, you know, Asia and then come back to America. So for us, it's summer. It's always summertime somewhere, and you just go and play. It's never really a tour. I think a tour, for me, sometimes it means, you know, like you're playing in Texas, and I mean, if you know your geography, and then maybe you go to New Mexico and then maybe Arizona and then California. You know, it's like but we don't do that. You know, we'll fly from here to, you know, somewhere in South America, and then the next show will be in Kansas City. You know, it's not really a tour. It's a tour if you get in a plane and fly everywhere, yeah.
Have you, with the new, with the reissues coming out.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to, like, was it like looking in a box full of old love letters from college where you got to go and dig around and
right.
have a lot of hands on it? Like,
well, I mean, you know, I don't know, it's like we have some of our old records, you know, like the one guy just mentioned in the hallway, She Don't Use Jelly, came out in 1993. So that's a song that we've played and been, you know, nurturing into the world. You know, I always look at songs that are kind of like these orphaned, you know, children out there. And you have to grab them and help them through the world, you know. And and then our record, The Soft Bulletin, which came out in 1999, you know, these are kind of old records, and Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots, that came out in 2002. And, you know, if you're lucky enough that the world kind of makes these things popular enough that they skim the surface of, like, mainstream entertainment or something, you know, you're just always with them. And I think some people would probably look at that as being like you're stuck with them or in a bad way or something, but we don't. I mean, we're so glad and so relieved that there is three or four of our songs that at any music festival we play, everybody will probably know them. And then we get to pick and choose, you know, the other 15 or so songs that we, you know, think will work as well. So we've always kind of been going back into our catalog. And since we've always been the sort of producers of our records. I mean, we have producers. Dave Fridman mostly works with us. But all of our stuff, we have it ourselves. And so we're always kind of revisiting it anyway. Now, some of the tracks that are on the very extended Greatest Hits package that just came out, they would have been tracks that I've not heard in a long, long time, just because I don't know where to get them, you know. They would have come out. There's like a Sub Pop single that we did. Gosh, this has to be in the early 90s,
yeah,
you know.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, and maybe even late 80s. I mean, you know, it's like, in, you know, it's a long, long time ago before there was, you know, computers jumping around and everybody could grab all the files. So some of them we would have had them, but it probably in the beginning was on like a cassette, the tape, if people know what those are, and that would have been transferred eventually to a CD, if people still know what those are. And then maybe it didn't make its way over to the master hard drive where we have, you know, thousands of our recordings, you know. So some of them in that way, I mean, I hadn't heard in a long time, but not because we never look back. It's some of them we just couldn't really, you know, find them or didn't know where they were. But our manager, his name is Scott Booker, he's quite insane about collecting everything that we've done. And he had kind of his own design on what he thought this greatest hits thing was going to be. And he started to really put it together about 5 years ago. And every 6 months or so, he would have another little like, oh, we got to add this song. We got to add this song. And I think I probably said 5 or 6 years ago to him, I said, you know, this thing's going to end up being 60 songs by the time we're done. That's not really a greatest hits. So it ended up being 50, I think it's 53 songs. So in the, you know, and I think that part of it, I think, is even more absurd that it's called the greatest hits, which, you know, is kind of a funny term in a way, you know, because we don't really have hits per se, if you think of like a, you know, a Tom Petty or someone like that. But, you know, I mean, I think to our own fan base and all that, I think there's definitely is a series of hits. And these other songs we think you would like, if you like those songs, we think you would like these other ones as well.
Have you always been a dreamer your whole life?
I don't really, no. I mean, I think that's the wrong term. I mean,
futurist?
No, I think I'm lucky that I have the gift of action. You know, and that can be, you know, and that can be too intense for some people to be like, you know, we're going to do this. But I talk, you know, about, you know, the way of making art and the way of being creative. And I think people do confuse it a lot of times with thinking and dreaming and reading but I don't really, to me, I don't. It's like if you're creative, you know, you want to get in there and you want to do what actually the word says, you know, you want to create. You don't really, the idea of thinking about it is part of it. You know, you get, you know, different levels of inspiration, but certainly I know by now from my own way of working, you know, that I want to do stuff, and that'll turn into a song or a painting or an album cover or a video. You know, I'm just ready to do stuff, you know. And if I get an idea of what I'm going to do, it starts to turn into the thing. I think that's always the dilemma when I'm talking to people about, what do you think of this? And they're like, they already know, like, well, you're talking about that. Oh, that means we're going to do it, you know. And so... So dreaming, I think, is fine. But dreaming is just dreaming.
Right.
You know, that doesn't give you the, you know, you really have to practice and make a, you have to be sort of dedicated to doing things and seeing them through and figuring it out. Yeah. Mm.
Okay. That's a good answer.
Yeah. I mean, I think dreaming is very, it's very pleasant, you know. It's nice because it never has to be wrong, or it never has to fail, or it never has to be confronted by other people's dreams, you know. But I don't think most artists that I know, I mean, I think that maybe early on in your creative life, that's part of it. But as you move on, there's just so little time to do the things that you want to do, because everything just takes forever, you know. We recently were up for a Tony Award with this SpongeBob SquarePants musical that opened this January on Broadway. But we did the song 5 years ago in 2013. And so, you know, it's a long process, you know, and you just have to start to get in there and do stuff. And so, you know, everything that we do, you know, as a group, it's all, you know, it's all increments of energy and time and looking into the future. But it really is doing it, you know. I think it's, you know, being imaginative is only, you know, it's only, it, that's just one part of it. A lot of times it's not that you're imagining what to do. You start to do something and your imagination and the doing are just all mixed up together. That's what I find, the most.
Well, perhaps it's because so many of your songs are imbued with a sense of awe or wonder, naivete, love. Works of beauty, you know.
Well, I think that probably is an area where probably when I was young, you know, probably from like when I was 8, 9, 10, you know, 9 to 13 years old or something, where, I don't know, there's some element of your personality that seems to explode in that time or something. You know, I sometimes think of all the things that I was exposed to. And if you knew all the little bits that I was exposed to, you'd probably know exactly why I'm look and sound and am the way I am right now. Because sometimes I when people ask me, I'm like, well, my mother loved Tom Jones. And people, a lot of people don't know who Tom Jones is now, but, you know, he was very popular in the late 60s. And my brothers loved the Beatles. And I loved all those things that my mother and my brothers and all them loved. So I would be a very young person being absolutely in love with whatever it was that they loved, you know. And my brothers loved motorcycles and drugs and you know, just everything, you know, very intensely. And so I think, yeah, I think there's an element of, I even think of something like The Wizard of Oz. This movie would be the only movie that would come on every year, you know, and you could see a movie. Back then, I mean, it sounds absurd now to think about it, but back then, you know, you couldn't just watch a movie. You know, you couldn't just look it up and go find it. And there would only be a handful of movies that you could have seen more than once or twice when we were very young. As time went on, you could see them more and more. But this Wizard of Oz movie, I think there was one summer, must have been when I was 7 or 8 years old or something, where we saw it when we were home on the TV back then, you know. And then we would go visit our relatives up in Pittsburgh, and I think it was on their television then at another date. And so I think somewhere along the way, I must have seen this movie at a very formative time in my, what I thought was good and right with the world or whatever. And I think it's, when I listen to our music now, I still, there's always this element of like, that's that little thing. And most people that are around me will go, well, yeah. But I'm not always aware of it. I just think, well, I'm just doing stuff that I like or whatever. But yeah, it's, I'm sort of trapped in that, yeah.
I tell you, those flying monkeys were the most terrifying thing, I think, in my childhood.
Well, I mean, I think they went from being terrifying to being fascinating, you know, as you get, when you're really young, they're fascinating. You get a little bit older, they're kind of terrifying. But then, you know, once you get a little bit older, they're cool again. Yeah, it's a bunch of different things, for sure, yeah.
We're talking with Wayne Coyne from the Flaming Lips right now. Your stage shows are epic. Explosions of color and love and fun.
That is a great, great description. It really is. Yeah, that's a great description.
Are you the entire Lips R&D department for, hey, let's, where did the ball come from? Like,
well, that would have been, I mean, now that we've done it for so long, I mean, it's kind of evolved into being, you know,
sure,
a more normal thing that we do. The very first time I did it, well, I mean, we had been looking for this thing that we call the space bubble. We had been looking for it, you know, out there in the world. I was making this movie, Christmas on Mars, and in the movie, I arrive, my character arrives. I mean, I'm an alien from outer space, but my spaceship is this floating space bubble, which is very much like the way the one of the witches in The Wizard of Oz arrives. You know, she just sort of floats in this bubble. And so subconsciously, that's what, you know, I realize now, oh, I'm doing that same sort of thing. So I was looking for this space bubble to do the movie with, which I could never find. And the minute I made the movie without a space bubble, I just put it in there with computers, which people think is real now, but because it looks so much like the one that I got. A couple of weeks later, I actually found one on the great internet out there. And the first time that I used it was at this giant, you know, show at Coachella. And didn't really, I had an idea it would work. You know, I didn't really know if it would work or not. And just decided, no, fuck it, I'm just going to do it, you know. And, you know, I mean, there isn't anything you can say about it. I think by then, you know, the idea that you're doing something that just sort of is out of the ordinary or something. I mean, to me, I'm like, yeah, I'll do that, you know, and I wanted to do it and I thought it could work or whatever. Now I think, you know, little by little, it got to where you could hold a microphone in front of where the PA system is without it feeding back. I mean, back in 2004, I know that sounds strange to say that, but it was not a very common thing for people to be in the crowd and in front of those speakers and singing. Now, all these things, technology is a wonderful, wonderful thing, and now all these things have kind of worked out to where you can have a microphone in front of the PA, and it works. So now I get in it, and I sing a song in it and stuff. But back then, I would just get in it and sort of jump out there and come back.
Did you do it cold? Did you try it anywhere first?
Well, I tried it in my front yard, and I did try it backstage at Coachella. But only with a few people, you know, I wanted to see, like, you know,
waving to your neighbors from the space bubble.
Well, you know, I mean, just in a sense
well,
of like,
Wayne.
Well,
what's he up to now?
I thought if 5 or 6 people could hold me up pretty easily, that would work. Yeah. You know,
and when you think of it being lots and lots of people, I mean, it's quite easy to go on top of them. And I mean, I see that now, but yeah, you just kind of have to go for it and hope that you don't break somebody's neck or something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We're taking a lot of your time. Can I ask you one thing that I generally ask all bands? Do you have any fond memories? It's okay if you don't, or distinct memories of Milwaukee when you.
Well, I mean, we were talking
here
about that. We just played at this insane. We say like Elks Lodge kind of giant place. It's got a ghost swimming pool in the bottom of it. Is this something you're familiar with?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's it called?
The Rave.
Oh, there you go. I mean, it's got this weird new name, but it's a crazy old theater or whatever. Just amazing, amazing place. People still send me pictures of the show from that. And you're just like, oh my God, you know, we've got this insane show and it's in this insane room. And, yeah, but I mean, we've always played Milwaukee. I mean, Milwaukee's always been one of the things you go to. You know, you're playing in Minneapolis and Chicago, and this has always been part of the thing. But my memory doesn't go to specific little spots. Steven remembers everything, every place we've ever been and all that. But mine will only go to like the recent stuff. Like, oh yeah, we were here in like in October or something. Yeah. But, my Britney Spears story was in, you know, at a Summerfest. So I have two good memories, yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll create another one tonight. Wayne, I can't thank you enough for your time.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
Well, cool.
Well done.
Good evening.
There you go. All right, cool.